Hello and welcome to another edition of the Cultural Colchester podcast. I'm Tim Young and I've got another special guest with me today, and it is... the creative director from the Mercury Theatre, Ryan McBride. Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm really good. Thanks for having me.
That's not a problem. I want to start on quite a quirky beginning in that we've got something in common in that I think the letter Y is very much underrated.
It really is.
It really is. Yeah. And I've got a Y in my first and last name.
Yes.
And so have you.
I have indeed, yeah.
That's fantastic, isn't it?
It really is. Ryan and McBride. That's it. Yeah. And normally McBride is spelled with an I. But
yours is a Y.
No, because I get it from my stepfather. It's not my real name, actually. It's my stage name, yeah.
It's your stage name. Even better. Yeah. My name, Timothy Young, is my real name. But anyway, I thought that was quite quirky. Yeah. I don't use Timothy.
No.
Anyway, that's a good way to start. But look, we'll get into, yeah, Germany, Norway, Edinburgh, West End, Colchester. Of course, they will go together very well. We'll get into that later. Uh-huh. But you're a theatre man. You've had incredible career. Mm-hmm. How did you get into it? Well, did you come from a theatre-based family, or how's it work?
Not in the slightest, no. I'm the son of a pig farmer, so yeah, never had any theatre at all, actually, in the family. We had... we did a pantomime every year at school, and I went and auditioned for it. And normally, they were expecting me to play kind of Jack or Aladdin, which would be totally incorrect nowadays. And I asked if I could play the dame, and normally one of the teachers played the dame. And they said, you can audition for it if you want. And I got the part, and that was it for me. I just fell in love with theatre from that moment.
And which panto was that?
Which one was it?
Were you Widow Twankey?
Yes, I was Widow Twankey. That's right. Excellent. Yeah, that's right. And we're doing Aladdin this year at...
So where was that? Where did you go?
This was in Haydon Bridge. So it was in the north of England.
All right.
Northumberland.
Oh, very north of England.
Yeah. I mean, proper in the middle of nowhere. I mean, the place I actually grew up was a place called Bellingham. And it's a bit like Brigadoon in that it felt like it appeared every 100 years. And the last time it appeared, I managed to get out.
Well done. And so how did you then grow into the... So that was your first experience of theatre.
Yeah.
At what stage did you think, I want to do this. I want to do this for a living and be my life.
So I did the panto I thoroughly enjoyed that. And then got cast as Richard III. Yeah.
From Widow Twankey to Richard III.
Yeah, I mean, very similar roles. And then just loved that. And instantly started to kind of get disaffected with the director, who was this crazy eccentric teacher called Michael Fry. And I was like, oh, God, I could maybe do better than this. So I went to my local amateur dramatic society, the Bellingham Amateur Dramatic Society.
Let's name check them.
Yeah, well,
Are they still going? Do you know?
I just want to mention, they are still going.
Excellent.
The acronym is BAD. And, kind of love that. And did Confusions by Alan Ayckbourn for them, directing it. And then every year I was directing for them. So only age, what must have been about 17, 18.
Crikey.
Yeah, kind of incredibly precocious and overly confident, probably really arrogant. But they let me do it. And on the back of that, I went, okay, this is clearly the career for me. And went to apply for drama schools, got into LIPA, the Liverpool Institute of Performing Arts, or the Paul McCartney Fame School as it was then.
Of course.
Did 3 years there, and what they do there is they allow you to specialise in different things. And I did directing, came out, got some various different jobs, kind of working on the fringe. Got spotted for a gig where I went to then work at the West Yorkshire Playhouse doing Bat Boy the Musical. That went really well in Leeds, and so they transferred it to the Shaftesbury Theatre. Mm-hmm. Where it bombed.
Oh dear.
Yes, absolute. But on the back of that, so what happened there is you go from being a student to working on the fringe, then working as a resident director. And on the back of Bat Boy, even though it bombed, I got another interview for and met this director called Stephen Daldry, who gave me the job on Billy Elliot as his assistant. So I did 2 years looking after Billy Elliot, which was amazing. Wow. And obviously what you learn in the West End, you know, doing this giant big show, working with all these, Tim Healy, Phil Whitchurch, all these big actors, Aidan Gwynn,
fantastic.
Yeah, it's a really good
experience.
Way. Yeah, cutting
so
your
how
teeth.
How old were you then?
So by then I was 25, yeah. And those moments of being utterly terrified, but going, okay, well, it's happening, so just go with it.
Go with it, yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. And am I right in thinking that the stage musical of Billy Elliot has different music to the film?
Oh, yes.
Because Elton John wrote it?
That's right, yeah. So, of course, what's brilliant about the film is the music's so iconic, isn't it?
Oh, Town Called Malice.
Yeah.
What a scene.
Just stunning. Yeah. But, of course, if you're doing a musical version of it, you can't do that. You can't use those tracks. So yeah, they
can't. So Down Call Malice isn't in the stage. Never seen the stage version of Billy Elliot.
I think what they've done with the stage version is, because obviously the film you've got, I think, what is it, an hour 45 minutes. So mm-hmm. it's just under 3 hours is the musical. So they've really pulled it out and pulled out the politics in particular. And what Lee Hall and Elton John did is they went. I'm laughing because I actually had to direct Elton John in the show. We had a
when you were 20 in your 20s.
Yes. Yeah, so this, again, was quite one of those terrifying moments where we did a gala performance. And so what we did is we put some celebrities into the show. So we had Elton John played Mr. Braithwaite, who's the piano teacher, the guy that does the piano.
Yeah.
So he was there. And then we had, who was it, Louis Spence? Not Louis Spence. Who's in, you've got Sharon Osbourne, Simon Cowell, and Louis...
Yeah, the Irish fella.
Yeah, yeah. So they
were names escaped me at the moment.
They were the panel in the audition. So you had all these, and so I had to, and Stephen was meant to be there. And of course,
Louis Walsh.
That's it, Louis Walsh. Yeah, not Louis Spence. Completely different. so we had those three, and yeah, Stephen was meant to be there, but then he turned up with a toothache, interestingly. So he wasn't able to. He wasn't able to direct them, so all of a sudden I was thrust into this role. Yeah, and actually Simon Cowell
directing Elton John.
Yeah, I mean that was, and he did it once, and I said, "Do you want to do it again?" And he's like, "No, I've done it. Piece of cake." Of course, when it came to it on the night, completely forgot the lines, didn't he? Bless him. Crumbs. I mean, utterly terrifying. Look at the Billy. The Billy knew all the lines for him, so prompted him.
Wow.
Yeah.
So where did you go after that? So how long did you do Billy Elliot for?
I did it for 2 years, and it was exhausting because with something like that as a resident director. Normally, as a resident director, you go in twice a week, know the show, go talk to the actors, schmooze them, make sure they're all okay, and then bugger off. On Billy Elliot, you're rehearsing every day because you've got to look after the four Billies in the show,
yeah,
and then
of course.
Got two Billies in rehearsal at any given time, plus Michaels and Debbies, and you have to. Note the Billy, so watch the Billy, note the Billy, and then make sure they've done the notes. So it was just 2 years, really intense, but actually, what I learned on that show. Yeah, exactly.
So where did you go? What theatre was that?
That was at the Victoria Palace, which is now House to Hamilton.
Of course, wow. So after Billy Elliot, what happened?
So but after, yeah.
That's quite something to top, isn't
it? It is. So what the next step is, and everyone has a different journey, but my next step was then to work as an associate. So I went to work as an associate to Fiona Laird at the Old Vic Panto. Did the, which panto it was. I think we did Cinderella for them, the Stephen Fry one.
All right, brilliant.
And then she then was offered a job over in Germany. She said she couldn't do it. Would I be interested in doing it? So I went and flew across to Frankfurt and met the artistic director of the English Theatre in Frankfurt. He offered me Death Trap. On the back of that, did Death Trap. Then we did Hair. And before I knew it, 10 shows later, I'd done all these shows in Germany. And on the back of that, this other theatre contacted me and said, do you speak German? And I said, nein. my German is Scheiser. They said, okay, that might not be a problem. And they offered me this work in German. And that was really interesting because how do you direct in a foreign language? Luckily, so I had, what you do is you have a bilingual text. So you have the English text and you have the German. And luckily, when you get there, of course, all the Germans speak just amazing English. So I would try my kind of toddler German, to try and make it. And they're like, nein, please, we speak English. Don't.
So when you get the German and the English translations together, the German must be a lot longer because their words are a lot.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to really space it out. So when you're doing things like Faust, which is epic, you've got to really space it out. And make sure, and then I action the text as well. So I would action it in English, and then I would action it in German. And when I say action it, I mean what I do is with each line, I kind of go, what's the intention on the line? I usually find a kind of verb to kind of help the actor with a kind of steer. So yeah, but you'd have to do it in English and then in German, and then learn how to pronounce it. So you'd do it like a complete tool in rehearsal.
So whereabouts in Germany did you go? All over Germany?
So actually, no. I said Frankfurt,
Stuttgart,
and Trier. And a little bit of time in Munich as well.
That must have been incredible.
Yeah, it was. It was really great. Yeah. And So when are we talking now?
Are we talking?
This is my late 20s into my mid 30s, kind of going backwards and forwards to Germany, at least once or twice a year. Mm-hmm. And it's a very different theatre scene over there. So whereas here, whereas the British audience, I think, absolutely. They want a night of in entertainment. Yep. You have to entertain. There's a lot of kind of much more of a kind of commercial.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying the Germans don't.
You don't have to be entertained. Yeah. Germans don't want to be entertained.
No. It's so strange, isn't it? But there's a much more kind of intellectual, cultural. So they do not. They do whatever happens. If you're doing a Romeo and Juliet, they do not want to see a traditional Romeo and Juliet. They want to see you deconstruct it. I think I'm with the Germans on this.
Yeah, I've seen so many Romeo and Juliet.
Exactly. That's it. Yeah. So they want to see it interpreted for now. How is it relevant now?
Brilliant.
And so they push you to be bolder out there. And so often I found myself, the kind of work I was doing in Germany was very different to the work I was doing over here. Because over here, often as a freelance director, what happens is you get invited to often do the shows that the artistic director doesn't want to do.
Yeah.
You know, those sorts of shows, which are kind of more for the core audience, but they'd much rather be doing the more interesting work. So they give you those shows.
So you're directing actors in a language that you don't speak.
That's right. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it was fun, and I thought, how on earth do you do that? But this is why the acting was so good, because with acting, if I say to you, okay, I want you to badger that person, or cajole, or excite, or strangle, if it becomes kind of larvae terms, then you can see that there's a universal language there. You know, whether you're saying it in German, Japanese, or whatever, you can see if someone's bullying someone.
Yeah.
So very quick, and that actually forced me to be super specific. And it was something I learned on Billy Elliot, because a lot of the time I was training the kids to act. You know, these kids were, really raw. Yeah. So I was saying that what I learned working on Billy Elliot was I spent a lot of time training because with Billy, when we auditioned, the focus was on finding raw talent. We weren't interested in, public school. Mm-hmm. Kind of RADA trained or Sylvia Young trained kids. We spent a lot of time going all the way around the country, meeting lots of kids. So we had kids off Manchester Estates. Kids from Newcastle. All kids that had this raw talent who could dance. They didn't necessarily need to sing, so we had to teach them to sing, and we had to teach them how to act as well. And so with that, you had to be incredibly specific on each line. You had to make sure the kid knew exactly what the thought was behind what they were saying. And that's how it should be anyway, but it really forces you as a director to be so concentrated in that. And the same was then, I applied the same rules to Germany. And there you go. That's how we survived.
Wow. So how's your German now?
It's got better. What's hilarious is that I know things because I did the Crucible. So I know pregnant, Schlange. I know Hexenjahr, because that's the Crucible. Hex, witch. So Raus, out. I did 1984, so I know Gedankenpolizei,
Thought
Police. So that's it. Unfortunately, none of these are useful in a conversation. If I started talking about pregnant Thought Police, people would think I'd gone mad.
So how long did you do this German sojourn? Sounds amazing.
It really was, and I have to say, it's one of the not sad things, because I love my job at the Mercury, but it is definitely I used to go there every year, and I have lots of friends and things over there, so I constantly used to go backwards and forwards. But the last time I went was it 2 years? Probably 2 years ago.
All right.
Yeah. To do Romeo and Juliet. Yeah.
Okay. A deconstructed Romeo and Juliet.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was all. It was very, very deconstructed. It was all set in a mortuary.
There's a lot of death.
That's right. It starts in because I thought actually the piece starts with announcing that they're dead. So I thought, okay, so let's make the chorus a mortician, and he's telling us that they're dead. So they were there on the slabs, and then we do a rewind.
Oh.
5 days ago, 4 days ago, 3 days ago,
like
2 days ago.
I'd like to see that.
It was fun.
That'd be good. And where did you go after that? So I've got Norway. I've got Edinburgh. We've done a bit of West End.
Yeah.
Been back to the West End?
Yes. So I do. I mean, I've worked on all sorts of shows. Matilda,
How did you get to Matilda?
The Light Princess. So Peter, who was the choreographer on Billy, also worked on Matilda and said, you're working with kids. Ryan's good with kids. So come in. So I got in there. So I went to work with Matthew and did the workshops and that. And then got offered the associate role on that at the RSC, which looking back, you think, maybe I should have taken it. But I also got at the same time offered the German premiere of Frühling sehr Wacken, Spring Awakening, musical. It was a German premiere. I thought, I should
do that. Yeah. Did you get to meet Tim Minchin?
I did. I spent many an afternoon with Tim Minchin. We used to play ball. In fact, that's how Casino, I don't know if you remember last year, Tim did an announcement for us. He did our song competition. Right, a song competition. So he did the video announcement to say, come and do it.
Oh, wow. Well, I wasn't into Tim Minchin much. I knew he'd written Matilda, and I went to see that.
Yeah.
Because one of my kids is called Matilda. We went to see Tim Minchin at Ipswich, and I was blown away by how talented the guy is.
He's amazing. And actually, he's a genuinely gorgeous human being as well. Yeah. You know, when you kind of meet, sometimes you meet celebrities and you think, they're going to be nice. But he is a really genuine human being, lovely man.
Fantastic. Well, so what about this Oslo?
So the Oslo experience.
What's the Oslo experience?
That was really. That was.
Didn't get to speak Norwegian.
No, I didn't get to speak Norwegian again. No. So that comes from a gentleman called Kjell Ula Horn, saw a piece of my work and asked me to help him devise or dramaturg this musical called Tonight. Which was all in English.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, so I kind of went to work with him on that. And then he said, okay, right, we're going to do it. And he just had kind of crazy money. And he was, the brilliant thing about Ula is that he persuaded people to give him money. He was a great salesperson. Even though, you know, I think both Ula would admit, both and I would admit, it probably wasn't the best piece in the world. But still, you know, off we went. And before we know it, we're at the Oslo Concert Hall doing this performance. And it's like, how has this happened?
That's a seriously large venue.
It was huge. It was huge. That's right. And we're putting on this new musical in English, which really, you know, needed work. But there we were. And it went, they seem to really appreciate it. He was brilliant. He was like a real character. Kjell Ula Horn.
Okay.
And his wife is called Randy.
Randy Horn. No, I'm not having that.
He came to me and he said, because he actually, his name is pronounced Horny in Norway, so she's called Randy Horny. And he came to me and he said, Ryan, what should I do about this? Because in England, people will find that funny, won't they?
Yeah.
And I said, Randy Horny is a funny name, yeah. And he said, do you think we should change her name to Brandy? I said, she's gone from a porn star to a dessert.
Brilliant. So that was another great experience for you.
Yeah, it was. Again, just these moments of just being thrust into it and going, okay, well, you know, these are the opportunities coming along, so you just got to take them.
Yeah. Tell us about your Edinburgh experience.
So I went to Edinburgh 3 times. And again, as a young director, I think that's one of the great things you can do if you can. And I had to do all the kind of fundraising. So three friends got together. And we said, okay, we'll raise the funds to do it. We'll put the show on. Which means we produced it, I directed, and they acted in it. And off we went. Really good. We did Heart of a Dog by Mikhail Bulgakov, taken from Russia and reset in Harare in Zimbabwe.
Sounds very Edinburgh.
Yeah, very Edinburgh, yeah. It's interesting.
Were you in one of the tiny venues or a bigger venue?
We were in the assembly rooms.
Okay.
Yeah, but we made a mistake. Have you really?
It's a great experience. Yeah. We'd encourage anybody who hasn't been to go to the Edinburgh.
It is genuinely, genuinely brilliant, yeah, the whole thing.
And hopefully it'll happen again this year, or have they decided?
They are, yeah. They are going ahead. That's the last I heard, yeah. Brilliant. And then they've got a kind of online backup plan as well. So, yeah, I'd definitely go. But the first time I went, we went with a piece called Gogol's Underdogs, which is an adaptation of Nikolai Gogol's short stories. In that, there's a giant nose. And I remember that to get people in to come, you have to go and entice people in to come and see the show. So there's this thing called The Mile. And on it, it's all these different artists desperately trying to persuade people to come into the show. And in this particular instance, we had this giant nose. So we used to parade up and down and take it in turns. I remember this is the weirdest moment of my life, walking up and down the street in Edinburgh, dressed as a giant nasal cavity.
That's day rigueur in Edinburgh, isn't it?
We need to bring that to Colchester.
I think we do. We'll get to Colchester eventually, I promise you. And what was your third experience in Edinburgh, did you say?
So what did we do? We did that, and then... And then Hamlet the musical.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
I don't think I've seen Hamlet.
No.
How does Hamlet work as a musical?
This was a complete spoof.
Great.
So this was
I don't think Shakespeare would mind.
No, I think you would love it actually. It was set up as the whole point of it was that it was an amateur dramatics group who decided that they were going to put on Hamlet the musical, and then they start to tell the story and it becomes a rock musical.
Yeah. Wonderful.
It was really funny. So it did really well at Edinburgh, won an award, best production, and then went to got picked up by Northampton. And then went on a little tour, and was at Richmond, and then we were just about to go into the West End, and I hope they won't mind me saying, but the three writers then completely fell out.
Oh dear!
Yeah, and it all collapsed. Yeah, I won't name shame, but yeah, bless them, they just all fell out, and about royalties in the West End.
Okay, so they never got to the West End.
Never got to the West End. No, I've had two shows now that nearly went to the West
nearly
End.
Nearly went.
Yeah,
to
yeah. God damn it,
Ryan, with this stellar CV. How did we manage to attract you to Colchester?
Well, it was that point in my life because I was approaching my 40s. And you get to that point where, as a freelance director, I spent about half my life running around the world, you know, kind of doing all these different crazy jobs. And so there's that moment where you go, actually, you'd like to lay down some roots.
Yeah.
I did two jobs for the Mercury. I did Pieces of String.
Which was amazing. We might come back to that.
Ah, thank you. Yeah, did these two jobs and fell in love with Colchester. Because until that point, I hadn't been here before. And it's this most picturesque, idyllic, gorgeous.
It's lovely, yeah.
Yeah, gorgeous town. I thought, this is lovely. And then Daniel resigned. And it was just like, my predecessor, yeah. I thought, actually, hang on a second. Is this fate telling me something? So I applied for the job and crazily, they said yes.
Amazingly, they said yes. So I saw Pieces of String and I was absolutely blown away by it. Crying, laughing. It's an emotional roller coaster. I hate that expression, but I've used it, so I've got to stick with it now. And I think I emailed you or texted you afterwards because I didn't know you.
Yes.
That was amazing. Yeah. That's absolutely brilliant. Or social media or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's Gus Gowland, isn't it?
And yeah.
If people haven't seen it, do try and see it. It's great. How did you get to bring that to the Mercury?
So it's quite a strange story with that one because I used to work for a company called Perfect Pitch who specialise in devising new musicals and creating new musicals. And so I think it was maybe possibly 10 years ago now, I was involved in the early putting together of that particular musical. Oh, so all of the kind of workshops and R&D. And then it was moving forward, and I thought, oh, great, I'm going to be involved in this. And this other company came on board, the Money Men, and they said, actually, no, we'd like Craig Revel Horwood to direct it. So before you know it, I was out. And to be honest with you, my job was to come in and work for Perfect Pitch. So it wasn't necessary that I was going to direct everything. But I got quite attached to this one.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, I was off it. So then Craig Revel Horwood did it. But Craig Revel Horwood went in a different direction with it. And I know that Gus wasn't happy to go that way.
Okay.
So that didn't quite work out. And then Daniel Buckwright got his hands on it. And he was going to direct it at the Mercury Theatre, but then he resigned, and just happened
fell
to
in
say,
your lap.
Yeah, yeah, and it came back to me, and I said, and when he rang me, he said, you know, I've got this musical called Pieces of String, and I said, you see, do you know that I worked on the original workshop of this. He's like, no way. I said, yeah, there you go. So.
And it was brilliant. It was absolutely, is it still touring at all?
It
should be because it's a great show.
Thank you. Well, that's very kind of you. There is a plan. There are plans afoot to bring it back. So we just, but unfortunately, this thing called the pandemic, you might have noticed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Put a stop to that.
So the other shows that I've experienced that you've directed at the Mercury, Mull Flanders.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Good show.
Thank you very much.
Very good show.
Brand new, a brand new version of it. Yeah, a very different take on
Mull Flanders. Yeah, and of course, Colchester Connection.
Yeah, exactly, that's right. Colchester Girl.
At the Mercury, which is a great show. Cinderella, was that your first panto?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, it was Cinderella and Oliver were in the great tent season.
The great big tent. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
Oliver's one of my favourite musicals. I thought it was really, because that was when it was an amateur.
It was, that's right, yeah.
And, you know, you've been directing all we've heard some of the names.
Yeah, yeah.
And how was it to get back to working with amateurs?
Well, do you know what? Isn't it, amateur's a strange word, isn't it? Because what is amateur? Amateur's just the journey to being professional, isn't it? You know, in fact, you know, harkening back to my days with working at BAD, the Bellingham Amateur Dramatic Society, some of the people I work with there are still, even now, some of the best actors I've worked with. You know, some genuinely
talented people.
That's right, people who have either trained or wanted to train, but never couldn't because their parents wouldn't let them, or they needed to make different life choices because of kids and all the rest of it, but then do work in amateur work, and they're brilliant. They're just amazing.
That production of Oliver was
big
and
bold and
great.
And I thought they were all fantastic, all great to work with, all, you know, there's so much enthusiasm. I suppose that's the difference, isn't it? You know, sometimes, you know, when you're working professionally, it's a job sometimes. But when it's people who are doing it for love, you know, for no money other than the pure joy of doing it.
The numbers were great. And you had I presume you had more than one Oliver. Or did you just have one Oliver?
You just had the one.
He was amazing.
He was great, yeah. I mean, as soon as he came in, he went to the audition, I was like, Oliver.
Because Fagin usually steals Oliver.
Yes.
But, I mean, your Fagin was great.
He was good.
Was superb. But Oliver was, you know, tearing at heartstrings from the moment he walked on.
And that's it. And actually, thinking back to Billy Elliot, that's what I learned from Billy, is you've got to put the kid at the heart of the show, because then, you know, people will just connect with that kid. And he, as a father myself, I looked at the Oliver, and I just thought, my God, you just want to kind of, you know, give him a hug, don't you?
And the Mercury Pantos are now famous for being so brilliant, and Ash and Dale doing their double act, and all the great Carly did a
the baddie villainess.
Yeah, she was brilliant.
Yeah,
and then you did it in the tent, and then last year I could get it got streamed, didn't it?
It did, that's right.
And it got huge numbers of viewers.
I mean, it was crazy. Yeah, so we streamed it at Easter, and then we streamed it again at Christmas. Yeah, and it was in the thousands.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it was from that 125,000 at Christmas, 125,000 school children watched it, which is just brilliant. I had this really weird experience where they were watching it in Toronto, Cinderella, and they'd asked, could they speak to the director? Could I come and do a Q&A? I thought, actually, it's on Zoom. It's not going to...
Why not?
Yeah, I can absolutely do that. So I find myself on this Zoom call with over 30, these theatre lovers in Toronto, and they're in shock. And I'm like, guys, what did you think of it? And of course, they were expecting Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella. And they got the answer version with Ash and Dale.
Fantastic.
Yeah, the look on their faces. But in the end, I think they liked it. They were good. They wanted to watch this year's one.
Ryan, before we get on to more stuff about Colchester and the future and the new Mercury and why Colchester is this magnet for artistic talent, we'll do your favourite things.
Favourite things.
Okay. You'll get 11.
Oh, gosh.
You get 10, and then another one I throw in at the end. Channel your Sound of Music, Julie Andrews singing.
Okay.
These are a few of my favourite things.
Yeah, great.
All right, we're going to go through them. Bang, bang, bang. So first thing that comes into your head. Favourite play?
Macbeth.
Book?
1984.
Film?
Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind.
TV show?
The Wire.
Ooh. Favourite song?
Common People by Pulp.
Oh, right, yeah, good song. Good old Jarvis. Favourite director?
Film or
you choose.
I think film Wes Anderson, and then theatre. I'd probably go for Emma Rice.
Okay, I have to look her up.
She's a Knee High and Wise Children.
All right. Okay. This is the one that's catching people out. Yeah. Favorite famous person with the name Ryan.
There's not a lot. In TV at the moment, there's a lot. There's Ryan Pilkington in Line of Duty, and he's the baddie. And every time people keep talking about Ryan, I'm like, oh God, I feel for him. And there's another Ryan popped up in something else, but I suppose it's got to be Ryan Giggs, because he's the only person I can think of.
It's Ryan Godling, Ryan Reynolds.
Oh my God, of course, yeah, that's right. So in that case,
Ryan O'Neill.
I'm going to go for Ryan Reynolds.
Okay, yeah, good. Favourite meal?
Fish and chips.
Yes, man. I'm from Clacton. Man after my own heart. Favorite holiday destination? Say Clacton again, and you'll be my friend for life.
It's got to be Clacton. It's one of my favorite places to go. Yeah, just for fish and chips.
But really,
favorite holiday destination? I suppose like, what's the best one? The best one I had was I went to Shanghai, and just for the pure and unadulterated kind of alien experience of being somewhere that
never been to China.
Shanghai was amazing. Blows your mind. You can go. It goes from kind of third world poverty within a street, then in this kind of almost kind of Abu Dhabi type style mall.
Wow. You know? Yes, I've been to Rio, and that's exactly the same.
I've been to Rio. I love Rio. Isn't it? So yeah. Ipanema Beach. Yeah.
Incredible place.
Got stopped by the police.
Everybody gets stopped by the police in Rio, don't they?
Yeah, that, I think they must have done. And my friend is allergic to nuts, so he had a giant syringe in his pocket. and they literally thought he was a drug dealer. Yeah. Yeah. They're what we're doing with a giant syringe, don't they?
Shanghai. Okay, that's a great one. Favourite actor and or actress?
I'm trying not to be obvious because, like, again, you can think, what's the first one that comes to your mind? But is that just because I've just been thinking about him recently?
Who's that?
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Well, he is good.
Yeah.
Not bad.
You know, no, he's really good. And I've been watching a lot of Sherlock Holmes stuff recently. So the only names that are coming up, Robert Downey Jr.
and
Benedict
Cumberbatch. And actress?
Actress, I love Marianne Cotillard.
Oh, yeah, she's wonderful.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. And your... One at the end is, what is the favourite show that you haven't directed yet that you'd like to?
There are so many. And it's really interesting. When you're programming for a regional theatre, you have your list of the ones that you want to do. And you go, must do this. But then in the same breath, you go, well, actually, is there an audience for this? And being able to kind of find that balance is really difficult. So I'd love to do The Government Inspector. Again by Nikolai Gogol. Mm. It's such a brilliant kind of bracing satire.
I know it. I haven't ever seen it, but I know of it.
It's all about town councils, so you'd love it. Yeah.
Fantastic. Right, well done for doing your quickfire favourite things.
That's interesting. I didn't even know that, you know, that those were the things at the forefront of my mind. You know, it's like a psychology test.
You wait till you hear Steve and Tracy. So
really?
It'd be interesting to compare and contrast the three of you.
Yeah.
So what do you think of the... We've spoken to Steve and Tracy about the new Mercury, the £11 million revamp.
Yeah.
And you're going to be directing stuff in this fantastic state-of-the-art modern theatre.
Yeah.
Does that excite you? Right?
My God. It excites and terrifies. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that pretty much sums up my career. It's my constant state of excitement and terror. You know, what we're doing now is we're building, it feels like we're kind of empire building, in that not only are we just planning to launch a new season of work, but we're also launching the whole new building and the whole new ethos, mm-hmm. whole new branding.
Yeah.
And what that means and getting that right, you know.
And it's later this year we start, don't we?
That's right, yeah. So we opened the doors on June 26th.
Wow.
And then our first show's 30th of July.
And that's coming out soon, isn't it, the programme?
Yes, it is, yeah.
We can't reveal it on this podcast.
No, but... I wish we could. Yeah, it's all under wraps at the moment. That's right, yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited. I think lots of people are looking forward to going back to seeing live theatre.
Yeah.
Because it's been such a gap in our lives, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know the Mercury's very keen on getting people into the theatre who haven't been to the theatre before, doing that outreach stuff, because, you know, what are they missing?
Exactly right. It's what's the point of a regional theatre? You know, I think it's really shown us this last year how important theatre is, not only in terms of just, as I say, the entertainment, in terms of, you know, bums on seats and the curtain going up and the curtain going down, but just all of the wraparound activity that goes on in the theatre. So our senior citizens coming in and, you know, doing creative writing classes. We've now got this brand new dance studio, so we can do, we're going to do some move and groove classes, you know, for you know, special educational needs kids. You know, there's so many different things that people can interact, you know, whether it's having a coffee and a cake for mums and dads, you know, parents in the, while their tots go upstairs and do some sensory workshops, you know, all this, it's all about that. For me, that from the moment we open to the moment we close, we should be constantly engaging the people of the town.
Getting people in. I think they've done that, trying to do that at First Sight, trying to do that at the Mercury.
And
I think more people who can engage with this wonderful art and culture that we've got in Colchester, the better. And I'm very lucky to have had the tour with Steve of the new building, and it is amazing.
It is.
And it's going to be so many spaces, and the studio, it's going to be programmed as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the studio, it's interesting because obviously you've got
Changed much, the studio, because it had been.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But it's got a different colour. It's midnight blue now. Mm. Gone from the kind of traditional black to a midnight blue. But we're really excited about the studio work, because for me, the purpose of the studio is absolutely about nurturing artists in the area. So when we reopen in August, the studio is going to be programmed with what we're calling the Mercury Originals.
Fantastic.
So it's writing by writing by artists from the East. We've got some really kind of innovative shows. Actually, we've been doing them on our Mercury Reads, so our online work.
Yeah. Because we've had Paul T on, and we know Jackie's going to be
one
of them. And it's great. It sounds like an amazing show. So let's get into this hub of this podcast, which is, why do you think Colchester is this a magnet hub for art and culture? Well, I've called it the cultural capital of Essex, but I think it's wider than that. And its reputation is burgeoning all the time. Why do you think that is, Ryan?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I think that, like, the obvious one is that there's a kind of close proximity to London. So I think that
can be a blessing and a curse.
It can, because I've noticed that actually when initially doing talent development and going out and looking for new writers, new directors, all those things, like, a lot of the times, because there hasn't been in the past as many opportunities here, and London is so close, people will just go there and just set up, you know, and actually go, we'll focus because there's so many more opportunities. But I think there's just, I don't know, maybe it's just the kind of zeitgeist that, there's so many reasons why.
Well, we've got you, we've got Steve, we've got Tracy, we've got Anthony Roberts, we've got Sally Shaw. And these are, you know, serious names in our culture.
Yeah.
And they're in Colchester, which is wonderful for us.
Yeah.
And we attract audiences from, you know, very wide range.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy. I mean, is it the history? Is it the tradition that we've grown up with? Because, you know, people look at Essex and we know we get the old jibes about Essex and you know, we're trying to, you know, Essex has that, but it also has a lot of other qualities. I mean, that's the countryside, Dedham and Constable Country.
Well, that's, I mean, definitely the kind of rich heritage.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many. So one of the first things I did when I got the job was, like, you know, look up, you know, everything I could find out about Colchester. And it's like literally story upon story upon story. So it's kind of built. So you've got, you know, everything up to the siege and then Boudicca. In fact, that's the sad thing is that's what we were going to open with. So my whole first season was going to be about kind of local stories and local history. And so we were going to start with this kind of giant 30 cast strong version of Boudicca.
But
unfortunately, in the kind of social distancing world and the pandemic, it just feels like putting 30 people on stage is not going to, it's not the safest way to do it. Yeah. So I think there's that. There's the kind of rich history. There's a thirst for it here, isn't there? You go to some towns around the country, and, you know, culture is not their first call. You know, it's not something, you know, they have other kind of focuses. But here, it definitely feels like there's a lot of support for
it. The economic and social benefit of having thriving arts and culture scene.
Yeah.
Has to be seen to be relieved, really, doesn't
it? Yeah, that's it. And I think one of the things that certainly the Mercury focus on is that, you know, it's as much about, as I say, entertainment as it is about well-being. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the fascinating things that I found out when I did the research when I got the job was that Mercury is the messenger god. And so what is his role? His role is to connect people, and therefore connection is what the theatre should be about, and that's what we need right now. Having had a year of being in isolation, that's what theatre is there for. It's to connect people, to kind of, and it, as I say, in the kind of in the macro and the micro, whether it's, you know, having a coffee and a cake, or you know, sat in an audience and having, as you say, what, that moment of magic where it pieces a string. I mean, I used to sit at the back and watch the wave of emotion make its way up through the audience, you know, where people slowly, one person cried, and that set someone else off, and then it was this most amazing effect. You know,
and so we look forward to that magic returning to our lives very, very soon.
Yeah.
Ryan, that's been amazing. We've learned so much again. Thank you so much for joining me.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thanks if I haven't waffled on too much.
No, it was great. Join me again for another edition of the Cultural Colchester podcast really soon.